Patrimony's class this morning? Good class, wasn't it?
Yes.
The importance of good association and all that. Now keeping your tailgate up when you're delivering mulch in Florida. What a story. Hare Krishna. My name is Kripa Moya. I was here yesterday. If you weren't here yesterday, I'm here again today, and I shall be here again tomorrow. I'm feeling a little more perky than I was yesterday. Yesterday I was a little bit under the weather. Now I'm okay. Are you okay? Oh, God, come on. Where's the military? Do we have any Americans here that would say, sir, yes, sir?
Sir, yes, sir.
That's it. Okay, good. All right. Okay, let's begin session two, morning. And we're talking, first of all, we're going to be talking about qualities. Primary qualities of a preacher, secondary qualities of a preacher, because without being a preacher, you cannot do congregational development. But I want to approach it from a different angle. How many of you... Hi, Rob Malati. Round of applause for Malati. Malati's in the room. Malati's taken up responsibility for congregational preaching in this part of the world, and she wants to be here to see if there's anything new. And I can't promise you, Malati, but perhaps. These are, 16 rounds and 16 qualities. They're not exhaustive. It doesn't come from any scripture. It just comes from Kripa Moya's mind. Kripa Moya's mind is furtive, it's deviant, and he's always thinking of how he can be different from Shastra, different from Sadhu, different from Guru, just for the fun of it. But here's 16 qualities that I wrote up this morning, and I want you to look at maybe one of those qualities and to figure out what the opposite is of that quality. And I want you to do a little role play between you and a friend. Now, and because this is Radha Desh, that's boys with the boys and girls with the girls, because we don't want role plays, to get too lively. But here, you can give me two things. One may be just a hypothetical case of a preacher gone wrong. What happens when a preacher goes wrong? Okay, you can give me a hypothetical example. What does a person say? What does it like be like on the receiving end? Or you can imagine an event that actually took place to you, in which case it's not imagination, it's something that actually happened to you when you were on the receiving end of a devotee or a teacher or a preacher who really didn't do it properly. Okay. Now, for instance, knowledge. You ever been on the receiving end of a devotee who didn't really know very much, but wanted to kind of show that they knew a lot? I remember many, many years ago when I first joined, someone started preaching to me about the four modes of material nature. And when he got to number four, he was thinking, he had a broad North Country accent, And he was going, well, there's like four modes of material nature. There's like the mode for the Brahmins and the mode for the Kshatriyas and a mode for the Sudras and a mode for the Vaishyas. And it's the mode of goodness, passion, ignorance. And, there's another one, but I can't quite remember. It's Sanskrit or something. But anyway, there's four modes of material nature. So I was just listening. Course, and later on I discovered there's actually three. So what is it like to be on the receiving end of someone who really doesn't know what they're talking about? What is it like to be on the receiving end of someone who should be presenting you logical ideas, but they're all over the place? You ever been to a Sunday feast where someone has gone, so the universe, when we look out into the universe and we see the stars and we see the moon, which everybody knows they didn't go there. But anyway, the moon, there's so many thousands of stars. Actually, Prabhupada said there's only 28 stars, but you know that, I'll tell you a bit about that. So anyway, Lord Brahma, he takes birth on a lotus flower, and he does meditation, and then he creates everything. And then the jivas come, and they come into material nature. Then Brahma has four sons called the four Kumaras. We learned about that in class this morning. Do you know what I mean? And they all chant. You can see, because if you chant, we've all got to chant 16 rounds, you see, because if you chant 16 rounds and follow the regulative principles and get up at 4 in the morning, see, 4 in the morning goes with 4 regulative principles, and if you add them together, it makes 8. And if you double the 8, it makes 16. So, you know, it's like, I'm the knower of the field, and then there's a field. And I remember one time my grandmother had a field, and she used to keep a cow in the field. And, you know, cows are very important. They're actually sacred. I mean, we don't worship them, but they're actually very important because we get milk, and from milk you can make cheese, and you can make yogurt, rubbery, and, you know, sandesh and burfi, and, oh, what's that? I think there's Bengali sweet. I've forgotten what it's called. I think it's called chum chum. Anyway, it's really nice. It's a bit like a gulab. Only it's white. Have you ever had gulabs? Gulabs you make with milk powder. Are you a vegetarian? No, because if you're a vegetarian, it's really, what's happening? What is happening with this preacher? This preacher's all over the shop. Logical ideas? No. There's not one logical connecting sequence. Everything is in sequence. You ever heard the old American song, the foot bone is connected to the ankle bone. The ankle bone is connected to the shin bone. The shin bone is connected to the knee bone. And then it goes, now hear the word of the Lord. And then it goes through the body. So each bone is connected. And when we have a preacher who's not connected, he's saying the right thing. You know, it is a fact that, you know, the four Kumaras come from Lord Brahma. It is a fact that cows are important. But one idea is really not connected to anything else. So it's garbled. And people don't understand what's going on. Something down here. Moral. What about moral? Everybody been on the receiving end of an immoral preacher. Can be a man or a woman. Right? What happens when you have an immoral preacher? What happens? So you're into Krishna consciousness, yeah. So you're working for a living. You know, the thing that's really important is, you know, everybody makes a financial contribution to, you know, Krishna conscious causes. And especially it's very, very good if you give to Brahmins. And, you know, yeah, I'm a Brahmin actually. So, you know, if you feel that you really wanted to, you could, you know, contribute. And, you know, I'll use it in Krishna's service. You'd like to do that? Okay, that's good. Excuse me. What's going on here? Slightly squeezy on the moral. Treating morality as a little bit plastic. Or the worst one is, of course, the preacher starts talking and he says, so, you know, and he's preaching to a young lady and, you know, the preacher begins preaching in a particular way to attract the young lady, not to Krishna, but to him. And, you know, there are many, many stories like that. Faithful, 13, faithful. What does it mean to be on the receiving end of an unfaithful preacher? You know, I read Prabhupada's books. They're fantastic. I mean, they brought me to Krishna consciousness. Of course, as you go along in Krishna consciousness, you may need sort of other books to help you to sort of understand what Srila Prabhupada is talking about. You know, I went to a gathering the other day, and it's really interesting. I don't know if you heard of XYZ. He's written some wonderful books. And would you like to come? He's an unfaithful preacher. All right, so you don't have to do those, but I'd like you to take one of those, do the opposite, and with a friend, work out a conversation. And you have 5 minutes, just the person sitting next to you. See if you can do a role play. If you feel scared of doing a role play, then you'll never make a preacher and you'll never do congregational development and I'll never ever speak to you again and I'll go home. But don't feel under any pressure. So could you find a space somewhere in the room and choose your quality? You can go to this corner, Sheena and Lolita. Is it Lolita? Oh, no, it's not Lolita, is it? Yes, it is Lolita. Okay. If you go to that corner, and then Parampada, you're sitting with all the ladies, that's all right. Yeah, I've got nothing, no problems. No problems at all. And you sit with whoever you like, but just find a corner of a room, and your time, ladies and gentlemen, starts now.
So we have two qualities or one? One quality.
If you want two qualities and you want to make a real drama out of it, yeah, go for it.
So I was working with you, I have one, I have one quality. Somehow, in some kind of way, I could not be friendly. And you could be
three girls, fine. You want to do three girls, that's fine. Yeah. Yeah. Robert, do you want to make another one with Roy here? That's good.
I'm like a protector.
I'm inspired. Uninspired, yeah. How would you just say? You just be uninspired and everything I say.
No, it's not
such a totally unrealistic expectation.
I'm preaching to you, and my preaching is completely uninspired. It's
very, like, yeah, get out of stress.
You said really uninspired.
Sorry,
yeah, I can just be totally uninspired.
Very opposite.
Okay, let's try and think of something. So we need each other, that's in the book distribution.
Maybe we could do two parts.
One run, and then
I could be preaching to you, I mean, by preaching, then you come up with take your story with a grain of salt, because I don't know who wrote those stories. I don't know who told them. But it's just unbelievable. You call them big mistakes. He said all this stuff. That's right.
You were probably like...
After he was done speaking, I gave him the sauce.
So
it was like a group of friends. We were sitting there.
Come here, you know, take this book, you know, you have to read it. And you say, I don't have any time. I don't care if you don't have any time. You have to read this book. It's the book, it's the way back to God, you know.
Let's write down a little.
Right. 2 minutes left. Right. 2 minutes left.
I'll go up to you.
What's the situation?
Just talk on Christian consciousness. Is it okay if it's devotee to devotee?
Okay.
We'd just be talking about how wonderful Krishna is.
That's the annoyance.
Take it off. Alright. Discussing how wonderful Krishna is.
So we'd say this scenario before and then we'd end it up.
I'll just say this is an example of unfaithful preaching. We'll just sing it. What would you say? How wonderful Krishna is. Krishna is someone who performs so many pastimes, so many simple pastimes. They're amazing.
Many holes are covered
on hills. You could go home. You know, we should start talking about it. And then I'll say, yeah, I was just reading a Christian book the other day.
About it.
I'll just sort it. But,
okay.
I mean, how can a snake be 8 miles long? His mouth was touching the sky. They were touching the clouds, but the clouds are higher than his mouth could be. So I don't understand this. I mean, I don't know who wrote the pastime. I don't know who made this up. But sometimes you got to take these stories with a little grain of salt, right? I mean, Prabhupada had his editors, and besides, Prabhupada makes mistakes. And I don't know, that I just have to, just gotta take it with a little grain of salt, yeah? Okay, so that was one.
That was one of them.
This is from a personal experience. I heard a person speaking to me like this.
Oh my God.
It was a Gurukuli boy, he was 17 years old. And I gave him the sauce like anything when after he stopped speaking. So, anyways, maybe can you guess what the quality was? Unfaithful. That's what it was. Completely unfaithful to the past then. Alright. Now I'm on the receipt. So.
Hey, sir, stop. Please, sir, look here. You see this book? Do you have some time? You have to read this book. Do you have some time?
I don't
care. I don't care if you have time. This book will take you back to God here. Yes. Just, you have to read this book. I don't care if you don't have time.
Please, I don't have any money.
I don't care. Just, you have to give me a donation. I'm sorry.
Okay, I can give you... Do you have change?
No, I can take all of it. Sorry. Thank you. Wow.
Devotees are not that nice. And the prasadam is very bad. But you should ignore that. If they give you a prasadam, you should give it to someone else. It's not that nice. But yeah, the temple is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is the old temple all like that?
Mostly, yeah. The devotees are very rude.
Okay. And we can come anytime we want to.
Yes, if the devotees want to.
Oh, okay.
If they allow you, yeah. But maybe. Okay. Maybe, but you should join.
Oh. Yeah. Yes, some other time.
Okay. Thank you.
So that was one of it. Maybe you can guess also what she tried to. Yeah.
Outside.
You can see the schedule outside.
And then I can come in.
Yeah. Yes, you can come then. You can see the schedule outside, and then you can come. But don't go too close to the altar.
Why?
Because there are rules, cleanliness rules. You don't follow the cleanliness rules, I think. Because you have to bathe 3 times a day, and you have to chant the mantras like we are doing, and you have to get initiated to properly chant the mantras.
And if I do that, then I can come?
Yes, but it takes a little while, because you have to, you know, you have to follow a guru, and you have to take a guru from our ISKCON. You know, it's not something you just do, but yes, I expect you are a Hindu, you don't understand those things, but, you know, but you have to be very strict on the rules.
Okay, and
then
we'll come some other time.
Yes, it's okay. You're welcome. I think you know what quality is.
Uninspiring.
Unfriendly.
Better display. That was really good. Malazine, that last one. It wasn't you, was it? Okay, the boys in the corner here.
We can do it here, huh? Everyone sees us?
Yes.
So, good afternoon, dear friends. Welcome. We are the Hare Krishnas. And this is it's very fun, it's lots of fun. Something to do with feet. Like, in which way, I don't remember yet. So. But I guess we'll find out. Something like feet and the forehead.
Why not? Actually, my mom, she's in the hospital, and
end of... I'll tell you two stories. Oh, I'm sorry. You're so quiet, sitting in the corner.
They don't mind.
Come on. When I first came to the temple, I was chanting my rounds, or I was trying to chant a round, one of my first rounds, and my beads were touching the floor, okay? So what happens when your beads touch the floor, or you put the book down on the floor immediately? A devotee comes, and he said, actually, you should always put your beads like that, he said, because this is offensive. And of course, the first thing that you think that you've done something really bad, because offensive is a
strong word.
It's a very strong word, you know? And I thought, oh, I'm sorry. He said, yeah, you know, and then he tried to make up for it by giving me a little philosophy, and he said, yeah, actually, you see, we're all we're chanting, and Hare Krishna means to try to become the servant of Krishna, and actually, see, everybody here in the material world is, you know, we think we're male or think we're old or young, but actually in the spiritual world everyone's female. So by chanting Hare Krishna, we all become female. And then he walked off, leaving me, because just that morning somebody had preached to me about how men become agitated and therefore we have to wear this special underwear called kopins. It's called Brahmin underwear. We read it, we wear it so we won't get agitated, he said. And then we have a cold shower so we don't get agitated. So I was thinking, what's going on here? And then the beads, you know, so that we become female. So I was putting it all together and I was thinking, this is weird, you know, world-denying cult that I'm a part of. And someone else was, back in the days, we were singing Gaur Nityananda Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Gaur Nityananda Bol. And a devotee next to me was singing, he thought it was something to do with reincarnation. How if you didn't chant the names of Gaura, you would take birth as an animal or something else. So he was singing, don't be a vegetable, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. That's what he thought it was. And when the Govindam prayers came on, I just thought, well, he's singing that in English, so the Govindam prayers must also be in English, and I can't quite hear what it said. So I was singing, and the clouds in my eyes are blue, Govinda. I just sort of... Anyway, these are mistakes we make, but it's not helped when we have a preacher who's either in one of those cases. So very good. You all did very good on that.
It's amazing.
isn't it? That somehow or another, with the four modes of material nature and Brahmin underwear and becoming women, we... we actually, we're still here. I want to focus on these, on the positive qualities now, because the negative qualities don't go away, they just get a bit more subtle. So if a person is you know, really not knowledgeable, it really stands out. And, you know, we can make a little sort of role play out of it. But when a person is lacking in knowledge, insufficient to convince the person that they're speaking to, who is trying to look for philosophical knowledge and links, it can be more subtle. You can know about odd things. You can know about the six Goswamis, or you can know about this or that, but your knowledge may be very sketchy in certain areas. And then when a person has a crisis which depends on knowledge in just that area and you don't have it, then you can't help them. So to have knowledge means to be able to help people. Experience also, these two things. And Prabhupada said, you know, we all require good judgment, and good judgment comes from experience. And he said experience comes from bad judgment. So before you become a good preacher, you will be a bad preacher, and you will make mistakes. So don't give up, I think, but learn from others. Logical ideas, we saw that yesterday, didn't we? The system of logical ideas. Say something that people will be able to say yes to. So immediately, you know, someone comes over and you're putting your Mahaprasadam in the bin. Everything about that interaction is a no. No, this person's not friendly. No, I've done the wrong thing. No, I don't want to be here. It just sets up negative stuff in the body. And if you have too much negativity in the body, it actually turns into hormones. Your body has to cope with the stress of being with, in the company of a person who's extremely negative about you, what you think, what you believe, what you hold to be your values in life. The body itself goes into denial of that preacher's, so-called preacher's presence. And even if you say things, you know, for the next hour, which are nice, that person will still be, no, 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 get this person away from me. This person's a threat to my existence. The whole of material existence is sankalpa, vikalpa. Accepting those things that are favorable for my survival and my happiness, or my notions of future happiness, and rejecting those things or people or environments or circumstances which are against me. And so people want to survive. That's why they come to Krishna consciousness in the first place. But if you threaten their survival, how does a person... You know, the psychologist, Maslow, he has this hierarchy of needs. And basically it's, you know, the Vedic hierarchy of needs: eating, mating, sleeping, defending. And there's a couple more, but it's just an extrapolation of everything that Prabhupada's told us, actually. But I quote Maslow because you'll hear it often when people talk about a hierarchy of needs. The first need, of course, is oxygen. When someone threatens your oxygen supply, then your whole body goes into survival mode. Okay. That's why it's possible that everything shuts down when a person's drowning in the water. When a person's drowning in the water, the lifeguard, who's an expert swimmer and can save that person, comes over, and the person who's drowning will even attack the lifeguard. So in our analogy, the lifeguard is the preacher. There's a beautiful picture, painting hanging in the temple of Garuda coming and the Lord helping the devotee to come from the sea. But sometimes, just like we attack the lifeguard, even if a person is a good preacher, the person may be so much under attack from just the material world, that they confuse the preacher as not having their best interest at heart. So you may be a good preacher, but you may not get the right result because that person sees that, that there's some threat. Then you may be a good preacher, but someone may mentally project that you've come to take something away from them based on the fact that somebody who looked like you and spoke like you did something to them years ago. You know, we have cases where someone was a senior, advanced preacher who was speaking to someone younger, but because of, you know, child abuse that had taken place in that person's life, that was an older man. All the older men that he met in his life after that point, he thought they were corrupt cheats. He just couldn't help it. It was something deep down, because his body and his mind were working together to help his survival. And so he mentally projected that into every situation that he was in. So he could only deal with preachers the same age. Because an older preacher, they say that if a preacher reminds you of your father, generally you don't listen to them. If a preacher reminds you of your grandfather, then you listen to them. And the common thing that people say is that therefore religion and spiritual ideas are passed from the grandparents to the grandchildren, because there's no competition involved. It's just a related idea anyway. So in these cases, it's not the preacher's fault, but it's the person's inability to hear from that preacher because they're fighting for survival, or because so to be a good preacher means, as I said yesterday, you have to be a nice preacher. And nice stands for? N stands for?
Needs.
Needs. What are the needs of the person? What do they actually want to know? They may just want to know, have you heard of the singer, Boy George? You heard of him? Well, he wrote his autobiography. And he commented about some of the preaching that he'd received in ISKCON. He said, sometimes I would ask a question, and the question took me 5 seconds, and then the answer took 45 minutes. And he said, sometime during the reply from the preacher, I would start thinking of a television program that I saw and wished I was sitting watching television. I mean, he was trying to make the point that sometimes you have a 10-second question, and you really want a 20-second answer. But most of the public interaction that we do where we're giving knowledge is the Bhagavatam class, which is minimum half an hour. So they ask a short question, we give them a Bhagavatam class, and we think we've done them a favor. But actually, they wanted a really quick answer. And I'll give you a clue. This is something called, not class, but it's another C word, and it's called conversation. Conversation means you ask a question, I shut up and I listen. Then when you finish speaking, I speak, and then I don't take all your time, your precious human form of life, but we go backwards and forwards. So it's a conversation. So take your preaching out of the Bhagavatam class and make it conversational, and people will thank you for it. I don't know whether you want to get a list of these qualities down, but just on the other side here is the, well, it's empty, but if I had, you know, you could write the opposite in red, couldn't you? The do-nots. These are the do's, and on the other side is the do-nots. So the opposite of experience, you know, lack of experience, well, that will come with time. Logical ideas, opposite, illogical. Splayed out all over the place. It's good to have in your mind a mnemonic. A mnemonic. Mnemonic means like when you're learning music and you want to learn the notes, that every good boy deserves fruit. E, G, B, D, F. If you're learning music, or face, F-A-C-E. That's how you remember these things. So if you want to, Mother Urmila has a great way of remembering all the cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam. She has a mnemonic, but she also has a picture in her head. It's something that she learned when she went to... She went on a course in America for how to teach the Bible, and how to, part of the course was how to remember what was in the Bible. So if you find that you can't remember a logical idea, have a mnemonic, which is where you take the first letter of every idea. For instance, can anybody remember the ideas that we had yesterday? See if you can remember them. You remember the logical ideas? You can have many. What's the first idea we normally present to people? Okay. What did we say yesterday? We said spiritual search, didn't we? So spiritual search, and then next thing is fallible senses. Okay, let's see if it comes into something. And then it was not the body. Soul. It's all S's, isn't it? Okay, not the body. Then it was reincarnation, right? Then it was karma. Then what did we talk about? We talked about yoga. Talked about meditation. Then we talked about universal spiritual principles. And then we talked about God. So the word is snarky mug. Snarky mug. So all you have to do with this, you just remember snarky mug. But if you remember what they all stand for, you will have conversation in your head, and you can take any, you know, and you'll be able to process through. Or if you want to write something for each of these, like she said naughty Roger killed your mum and she's now underground. I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm just thinking of that on the spot. Okay, so what is it?
Snarky mug.
Snarky mug. Or she said naughty Roger killed your mum, brackets, who's now underground. Okay, so that's a mnemonic. So that's one way that you can remember it. Or you could just make your own up. You know, it can be something like Srila Satchinanda Swami notes retarded Krishna devotees sail on yachts in Monaco but eventually go underground. Okay? Well, you can make it up. Huh? But if it's funny and it helps you to remember it, then that's also good. And you'd be surprised that the thing that you will remember long after I'm gone from here is that image of a mother being buried underground by Naughty Roger. The snarky mug story. Will you remember what these things correspond to? Don't know. But you can choose yourself, and you can... But my whole point is that you should know what comes next. There's a book that someone wrote, and it was called What Do I Say After I Say Hello? And it was for people who find conversation difficult. You know, what do I say after I say hello? What do I say? Now what? Well, the best way to have a conversation is to actually ask questions. This is the way to ask questions. But if you ask a question, the person will give an answer. You ask another question, the person will give another answer. And if you make it natural, the other person will think, boy, she's a really good conversationalist. You know, she holds a really good conversation. He's just asking questions. And it is very, very curious. By you being interested in the other person, guess what happens? They don't think that you're dull and boring. They think that you're really, really interesting. Why? Because you're interested in them. See? It's strange, isn't it? However, you do have to be careful of asking all the standard questions that devotees ask. A friend of mine, we came to the temple at the same time. We both joined. But he confided in me. He said, you know, he said, I've met 6 people and they've all opened up the conversation the same way. They've all smiled at me and they've gone, so, what's your name? Where are you from? Oh, that's nice. He said, and everything I said, they said it was nice. It's a nice word, you see, for devotees, nice. Nobody uses that word anymore. People say cool, great, fantastic, or wicked. People don't say nice. I don't know what it's like in... You don't get this problem because you use Dutch or Croatian or whatever language, you know, Afrikaans or American. That's a different language from English. But in English, we have this word nice, but hardly everybody uses it. And this devotee, my friend was a little bit disconcerted that everybody he spoke to asked the same questions and said it was nice. He said, people must have said the word nice to me 20 times today. He said, I mean, I like them. I think they're nice people. Whoops. the other thing is that we do a lot of jargon, a lot of in-house words. I and 2 devotee friends went to a Japanese Buddhist center. And we asked the question that anybody coming to the Hare Krishna temple would ask, just to give ourselves the experience of going to someone else's temple. And so we were given a little 10-minute introduction to the philosophy of, it was Nichiren Shoshu Buddhism. And you would be surprised how many times the person dropped a Japanese term. You know, so he said, well, we get up in the morning. What's your daily life like? So, well, we get up in the morning, and you know, in everybody's room there's a gohonzon, and then we do gongyo, and then we might recite a little bit of the Lotus Sutra, and then have breakfast, and then people go to work, and then maybe they go for daimoku, and you know, that's pretty much the day. And so we kind of looked at each other, and I actually knew what gohonzon and gongyo and daimoku was, but only because I'd read the book beforehand. Now, gohonzon is a shrine, and gongyo is the recitation of their prayers, and daimoku is door-to-door fundraising. But the point is that they just slipped it into the conversation because for them, it was normal. But it's exactly the same when you say, well, you know, we get up in the morning, and... after my bath, I put on my tilak, and then I go for a mangalati. Then at 7, then we do japa. Then at 7 o'clock is darshan. Then we have bhagavatam. Then we have breakfast. Now breakfast is the first English word that they actually understood. So you think that you've been making sense, but this is what they've heard. So I get up in the morning, and then blah 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 blah, and then we have breakfast. You haven't made sense at all. You just think that you've made sense. And they're smiling at you because you're too nice a person and they know that you're a nice person and they don't want to interrupt, but, you know. These 3 days are not really about the art of preaching. That will come later on. But congregational preaching is never to... congregational development means never to allow yourself to get back to these old habits, because you'll find that people really don't understand what you're talking about. You know, if you talk about something, well, National Council, Euro GBC, GBC, Swami, Sannyasi, Guru, Initiation Committee, you know, all these things are all internal, structural, systemic vocabulary that we use. So we're either speaking Sanskrit, or we're speaking in-house terms, or acronyms. GBC is an acronym. That means you take the first letter. It's not a mnemonic. But you take the first letter, and you say, you know, ISKCON is an acronym. You see, it's not a word, people, okay? It's not actually a word in English. It means International Society for Krishna Consciousness. GBC is not a word, okay? It's the initial letters of governing body commission. I know you understand that. But sometimes we use these things like words. There are words which Prabhupada used that have now completely and utterly dropped out of the English dictionary. What to speak of the Dutch, and what to speak of the Afrikaans. Mellow is one of them. Mellow. You know, each of us has a mellow with Krishna. They will look at you as if you're speaking, you know, they're really trying hard. You won't find it in the dictionary, the word mellow. And so you always have to be...
I found it in the dictionary related to brandy.
Yes, yes, yeah. It means a softened taste. The way Prabhupada uses it, is the way his Guru Maharaj uses it, is the liquid essence of something. But when you talk about it in terms of a relationship, its meaning is poetic. And you have to go back to the 19th century, early 19th century, to be able to find this word in a dictionary. Rabindra Sroop, he wrote about this. You can't find it in a modern dictionary. The other word that devotees use a lot, envious. Doesn't mean the same thing. It used to be a very, very serious word. You see? Envious. It meant really nasty person. Prabhupada, I think, uses it in those terms, but envious just means you see something that you want. The other word that used to be a very serious thing, it used to be a hanging offense, capital punishment, was if you were a rascal. Rascal. Now, it just means a baby who pulls the books off the shelf. Oh, you naughty rascal. Well, someone who was naughty, the word was invented by Shakespeare. It wasn't there before. Shakespeare used to invent words. Prabhupada used to invent words sometime. But we take those words as English. So be careful. No Sanskrit jargon, no in-house terms. Speak your language and make sure that you speak their language. I just want to move on quite rapidly. When are we supposed to be breaking? It's in a few minutes, isn't it? We saw a lot of doubt creation in our little role plays. A lot of doubt creation. There was an awful lot of, I think, maybe, perhaps, I don't believe it, but they do. They say the deity's God, but, you know, I'm not so sure. What was the one? Who came up? Who was the Gurukul person? Oh, it was you, wasn't it? What was the argument you came up with? About
you have to take it a little bit with a little grain of salt.
You have to take it with a grain of salt, yeah. Which means what he's saying is that when I read Prabhupada's books, I take it with a grain of salt. You see? I don't believe it, and I'm not asking you to either. I take it with a grain of salt, and maybe you too, because you look like me. You know, everybody thinks that everybody's like them. Friendly. And you were not friendly. And if I met you on a cold Radhadesh corridor, I wouldn't come back. Your character. you have to be protective. You have to be protective. Because even though you're a good preacher, that congregation member's going to probably meet someone like one of the people that you portrayed. And then they're going to come back to you and they're going to say, it was just some Mahaprasadam, it was just some of this strange tasting stuff. I think it was burnt, I was putting it in there. And she came up to me and she said, you know, I'm not really sure I like devotees. I'm not really sure I'm meant to be in this movement. I'm not, having a panic attack. And you as the preacher then have to go into protective mode. And really, at that point, they don't want philosophy, they just want you to listen. And you know, a lot of the time, people don't want philosophy. They kind of just don't. They just want you as a person to be a friend. And you can say a lot by not saying anything. You can say a lot more by doing something for them. You know, when you wrap up a present for a person's birthday, that touches their heart and opens them up to Krishna consciousness much more than you coming to them and saying, well, actually, birthday, it's just the day that the material body came into the material world. I mean, there's nothing to celebrate, is there? You know, I mean, it's... Okay. I sent a birthday message to someone the other day, a congregation member, married woman, she's 40, and I said, you're the youngest looking 40-year-old that I've ever met. Now, do you think that took me further into that person's confidence? Do you think it helped me with the husband? Well, actually, I must tell you that the relationship is really good between me and the husband, okay? It's the wife who's less interested in Krishna consciousness. But Sachidananda Swami said something interesting. He said, when you're dealing with a couple, always deal with them as a couple. Never presume that the other person is less interested, or never let it be shown that the person is less interested. And the point here is that you can accomplish more. Prabhupada was very much like this. You know, the one incident that stands out for one of my godbrothers is the fact that during a guru puja in Mayapur, Prabhupada saw that my godbrother's toe was cut and he was limping up to the Vyasasan to offer his flowers to Prabhupada's feet. So during Guru Puja, Prabhupada wasn't interested in the flowers on his feet. He was just interested in my godbrother's foot. So he called them over to the Vyasasan and he said, well, you know, if you should bandage this up and you should get a poultice and you should get this thing. And then he called another brahmachari over and he said, I want you to go into Navadvip. You buy this, you mix it together for him, and you put it on. And so this was right in the middle of the kirtan. And that touched the heart of this devotee probably more than the Bhagavatam classes that he'd been in. So really, by your actions, you know, you open up the heart of people to receive the messages, because if you are such a wonderful person, then the God that you believe in must be a God of great charity and great love. But if you're penny-pinching about, you know, bits of prasadam in the buckets and beads that touch the floor, your God must be a God of laws and rules and must be very cold-hearted as a God. And no one really wants that sort of God. You know, Jesus Christ came along and told people that, you know, the Pharisees and the Sadducees, they're just into laws and they're worshipping the God of laws. And really, what we're interested in is a God of love. And look what happened. You know, only 1 billion people, right? Only the biggest religion in the world. Hello? We could learn something there. Okay? So the point here is that Christianity started out like that, and then somewhere along the way, there are branches of Christianity, many of them, that turned into legalistic religions of law, that God will punish you, you know, God will, you know, hellfire and brimstone preaching. So the message of love has to be demonstrated by a person who is loving. Then people will believe it, because you step out there as a representative of the most merciful aspect of God, who is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So better make sure that you care for the person, because that's what Lord Chaitanya cares for. You've got to be responsible. What do I mean by responsible? Responsible means, and here's a really difficult thing for us, and I'm going to spend a couple of minutes on this, because a really difficult thing for us is that I am a student and I'm not a guru. The only person in ISKCON who owns people's souls is the ISKCON guru. You know, and that's the first question people ask each other. Oh, what's your name? Who's your spiritual master? Isn't it? That's the first question. And when you're not initiated, Isn't it annoying? When Buddha said, who's your spiritual master? You know, as if to say, you better answer with a realistic name, because if you don't give me a name, you're a non-entity. You really don't exist. You haven't really made it. So who's your spiritual master? Think quickly. Oh, I'm aspiring for, Bhaktivedanta Muni Maharaj. Okay? Whew. Saved myself there. You know? So the only person who owns souls that we speak of in our common vernacular is the spiritual master. The reality of the situation is nobody really owns anybody, but we speak of it in those terms. We speak of belonging to the guru. I'm like, you know, who's your spiritual master? He belongs to me, and I belong to him. It's a common way of talking about it, which, you know, it does make people feel left out. And it will make your congregation members certainly feel left out if you ask them that question. I don't want to talk about that now because it's going to pop up again tomorrow, but it's a very important area. What I do want to say here about being responsible as a preacher is that you have a responsibility for yourself, but you've got to ask yourself the question, who does have the responsibility for the spiritual welfare of that person that you're preaching to? Because if it ain't you, it may not be anybody else. So what I'm recommending is that each of you, in your life in Krishna consciousness, have direct personal responsibility for at least 50 other named individuals. That means their going back to Godhead is your responsibility. You might as well. See, because if you don't do it, you want me to do it, or you want a senior Vaishnav monk to do it, or you want somebody else to do it. But really, having a mission for spreading Krishna consciousness is that you take personal responsibility for it. So somebody's got to. Just like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his setup was every disciple had a upadeshika, every upadeshika had a maha upadeshika, every maha upadeshika had a sannyasi, and a sannyasi had the acharya. So everybody was looked after by someone. In Jayapataka Swami's Bhakti Vriksha manual, we find each one teaches one while being taught by one. It means I'm a student and I'm a teacher, but it's not just broadcasting, because there's no personal responsibility. When you're out on Harinam, is there a personal responsibility for the people that you sing to? No. When you're out on book distribution, as we saw, Sheena, is there a personal sense of responsibility? No. The book distributor just wants to sell the book and move on to the next person. There's no connection. So who is it in the Hare Krishna movement who has personal responsibility for the lives and spiritual welfare of others? It's got to be what in the Catholic Church we would call a priest, or in the Protestant Church we would call a vicar. You know, somebody has got to have responsibility for a number of people. And if you take responsibility for a number of people, they will actually take responsibility for you. In the Ramayana, which is the story of Lord Ramachandra, in which we find all the different adventures of Sita and Ravana and Sri Lanka, and Tumari Mrityu hai, you know, all this. We find a description of Ayodhya. Ayodhya was the capital city, kingdom of Kosala. And in that city, it was very opulent, and we find descriptions of gold, silver, beautiful marble, palaces, and the kings had silks and diamonds, and, you know, bedecked, jewel bedecked saddles, and all the horses were pure. And then we get to a long list of all the wonderful things in the city of Ayodhya. And at the end of the list, we have a description of the Brahmins and how wealthy the Brahmins were. You know what a description of the Brahmins is? That every Brahmin had 100 families caring for him. which also means his wife and his kids. If you look after, I said 50, let's double it. If you look after 100 people, and if the rest of the family is interested, 100 families, you'll be a preacher and you'll never be short of funding. You'll never be short of friends. You'll never be short of provision. And for someone, try and understand this thing, that for someone who wants to live in simplicity, you know, and not to have to worry about, you know, going out to work and getting funding, but someone who wants to fully dedicate their lives to preaching, if you create this dynamic between you and 100 families, they will always look after you. Now, some families may get bored with you. Some people, this is just not working. And then you'll bring in other people. But if you just keep that 100, 108, you know, think 108, 108 beads, you know, my one mala of families. And then but what it means is that somebody somewhere is looking after each and every devotee in the Krishna consciousness movement. And yesterday, Malati, we said to ourselves, we started off by trying to define what was the Krishna consciousness movement, what is a devotee. And we started off, maybe, you know, devotees, 16 rounds, 4 regular principles, initiated by Bhaktivedanta Muni Maharaj, not just aspiring. We went very broad. And then we said anyone who has a spark of bhakti, who's following Prabhupada's teachings, then commitment was, you know, agreeing to chant a certain number of rounds, so they all need looking after. So, responsible, that's why I said this. They need to be practically engaged. You know, people need to do things. What did Prabhupada do with Yamuna? She liked to cook. What did Prabhupada do? Had her cook. First, he taught her to scrub the pots. Then she got to cook. Shamsundu could do carving. He carved Jagannath. So there's a lot of things to be done for Krishna, not just the beads, not just the books. But if you can engage a person as they like to be engaged, then people find it nice. I mean, Arjuna was engaged, right? He liked to shoot arrows. So what did Krishna ask him to do? Hello, shoot arrows, but do it for me. So you might have a person who likes to do business. You say, don't preach to him that you have to give up your business. There might be a person who really likes to, look after cows. Don't tell him that you have to give up looking after cows and move into the temple and become a brahmachari. Engage him. In England, there was this famous film star. Have you ever heard of the Pink Panther? You know, you ever heard of Peter Sellers? Okay. My name is Inspector Clouseau. I'm looking for the Pink Panther. So, in the old films, Peter Sellers, very famous, friendly with the Beatles. And, you know, George Harrison was thinking of giving a house. Anybody ever heard of the Rolling Stones? I know you're all young. You heard of and they're all very old, the Rolling Stones. Okay. But the Rolling Stones gave us wood to build a beam. They gave us big beams like this. Mick Jagger and the rest of them gave us big beams to put inside the first temple in London. Mick Jagger was a regular chanter of Hare Krishna. He was a congregation member. He had a bead bag, and it was a polka dot bead bag. You see. Anyway, rock stars can do what they like. So, and then Peter Sellers, he saw everybody just giving something because the devotees were poor. And so he said, well, you know, I've got a farm. Can I give you a farm? Okay? He had a farm, right? He wanted to give the farm. And what was the answer the devotees gave him? No. No, we're not into farming. We chant Hare Krishna in the streets. Oh! You see? Practical engagement. Someone comes to you with land, cows, silks, chariots, palaces. You know, the list goes on and on and on. You see? The only thing that we don't accept... Prabhupada was on a morning walk, and He said everything can be used in Krishna's service. He said, just see this building. We could use it in Krishna's service. It could be a nice temple. And all the devotees went, yes, Srila Prabhupada. He said, just see this car. He said, this car is a very nice car. It could be used in Krishna's service. They went, yes, Srila Prabhupada. And then he looked at a dog. He said, just see this dog. We can use this dog in Krishna's service. They went, yes, Srila Prabhupada. He said, no, you fools. He said, how will we use a dog in Krishna's service? Now, maybe there's ways that you could use a dog. But he, you know, they were just saying yes to the Prabhupada. Yes, Srila Prabhupada. And practically, there's realistic expectations. Okay? Realistic expectations. You know what someone told me? I was 6 months in the movement. 6 months. And this devotee said to me, he said, you know, in 5 years... And my name was Mick. He said, in 5 years, Mick, he said, I can see you taking sannyas. And I went up in my chair like that. So I said, really? Really? Oh. So it was totally unrealistic, as it turned out. So moral, I told you the story, but you know, it really does go on a lot. And it's not gross enjoyment sometimes, but it's subtle enjoyment between the preacher and the preached. And it's either dhanam, janam, or sundareem. These are the three things. Lord Chaitanya said, watch out for them. Unless the preacher, who's representing Lord Chaitanya, looks out for these things, you'll get caught by them. So, for a woman, it's men. I know one girl. She was preaching to a man. She said, he's very interested in Krishna consciousness. I saw her 2 weeks later. I said, where have you been? I haven't seen you for 2 weeks. She said, oh, I've moved in with this man. I said, you moved in with him? Yeah, we're going to get married. Eventually she married him. Now, Hare Krishna, maybe that's the way it happens sometimes. Okay? Don't keep Brahmacharinis waiting too long. I think that's the solution. But always be aware of your motivations. Always be aware of motivations. Gross motivations are easy to understand. The subtle ones, not so easy. The next gross one is money. You know, just wanting a person's funds and speaking to them in just such a way that they come forward with funding. It happens between preachers and congregation members, you see. Especially if they're easily motivated or even if they're in awe of someone. And then the other one is just a person doesn't want money and doesn't want sex, but wants followers. Just followers. The thrill of having followers. That is also it's not helpful for the person's spiritual life. And really, it's not helpful because what we see, if the motivation is for you to be my follower, what happens when you decide to yourself that you're finding it difficult to be my follower? Because that always happens. Just like I have 3 children, and every time they get to 14, what happens when they get to 14? The doors start slamming, the music starts turning up. I hate you, you know. I don't know, I wish I had someone else as a father. Did you ever do that? Something like that? No, you're too sweet for that. Maybe your brother. But it's something that children go through on the way to actually realizing that maybe their dad is okay. So if you're prepared for it, then you know when it's going to come. So in the life of a disciple, you know, a disciple goes, oh, you're a Maharaj, you have the lotus feet of your, you know, you have lotus feet and the words from your lotus mouth, you've saved me from the, etc., etc., etc. That's the first 3 Vyasa Puja ceremonies. And then afterwards it go, yeah, my Guru Maharaj doesn't understand me. You know, he's traveling the world, he's a sannyasi, doesn't he? You know, I'm married now, I have my first child, you know, he's not really, in fact he hasn't really written to me for, you know. And then you go through a teenage, you know. And then at the other end of that comes, ah, you know, all the ISKCON gurus, they're all the same, they're just kind of, it's okay when you're young, but they're not really interested in us now. You have to work through that what I call spiritual adolescents, spiritual teenagers, to get to the point of your guru is not for you. That's the point, you know, when we have a guru in the first place. The guru is just for me, what he can do for me. And a little while later, you start thinking to yourself, hey, wait a minute, maybe it's about what I can do for my guru. Maybe he's the center of attention, not my problems. And so that happens in your relationship with someone. And it's kind of difficult because, you know, I've preached to people over the past 30 years. And we reach a point in the relationship where they kind of get teenage in the way they look at you. And if you're out for a reward, if you're out for looking for someone who says to you, you know, Kripa Moya, you know, you're the best thing that's ever happened to me, apart from my mum and dad, and my kids, and my wife, and, you know, I'll serve you the rest of my days. If that's what you're looking for, just insert your name in there, then you will be bitterly disappointed. And Krishna, every single time. Because I'm just telling you now, you know, the motivations that you may have in preaching. If you look for it, the least bit of thanks, you won't get it. But it may come to you if you're not looking for it. And when it comes as a surprise, then that's extra nice. But if you're looking for anything, if you're looking for appreciation, if you're just looking for someone to say thank you, if you're looking for someone to say, you know, you're a really nice devotee, sometimes you don't get that. I was regularly going to one of our Namahada groups, our ISKCON groups, and someone said to me, it's nice that you come, but can you arrange for a sannyasi to come? You know, like an advanced devotee to come. I mean, you know, it's very, very difficult when people do that. But it has happened so many times that I think what happens is it creates a certain detachment for a preacher. And you think to yourself, okay, Krishna, you know, I guess preaching is a thankless task. And you do it. And hey presto, as soon as you develop that spirit of detachment and you just do it as a servant and you just do it as a representative, then things start happening. But it's quite painful. Speaking from experience. And people will dump you. They will dump you. They will just say, you know, I want another preacher, I want another mentor, counselor, whatever words you use locally. Faithful to the teachings, faithful to Prabhupada. And these here, we're going to be talking about these. Be systematic and be structured. In other words, look at a person's spiritual life and what they actually need. Don't take them to India, for instance, when they've just come to the temple in 3 months. I've made that mistake as well. You know, 3 months, and there's a group of us going to India. Oh, please, 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 can you take me to India? I really, really, really want to go to India, and I'd really like to go with you guys, because you know everywhere, and you know everything. And, oh, please take me to India. You know what happened to that person? They had a really bad stomach. They had a bad experience at one temple when they left the group. They came back, and we never saw them again. So be part of a system. I don't take people to India unless they've been chanting for 2 years. I'll tell you some of the other things that we do in the UK as well. We make people wait a lot longer. Last, be creative. Be creative. You know, think, what would this person like? Okay, she's into cooking, and there's no cooking course coming up, but hey, I know a senior disciple who loves cooking. Maybe I could arrange that one Saturday morning, this person comes all the way from Antwerp and comes to Radadesh, and she learns how to cook. And you know, if you arrange things like this, it'll be very, very good. Or this person plays a bit of guitar. And maybe this person would like to have, you know, their own kirtan band. You know, there's a thing in England now to have your own kirtan band. And because there's lots of yoga people into kirtans, you know. And so if we are creative, it just makes the spiritual connection with that more colourful. Alrighty, let us stop here, and then we'll go forward in 5 minutes? 10 minutes? 10 minutes, just before 10 past, but please come back just before 10 past. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna. And we'll have the